Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Steve Zwemke. Neel Kashkari is president of the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis. It's one of 12 regional banks in the Federal Reserve System. He speaks to the Rotary Club of downtown Sioux Falls today at noon at the downtown Holiday Inn. He spoke with In the Moment host Lori Walsh about the role of the Fed in Minneapolis.
Is here to represent what we call the 9th Federal Reserve District, which includes North and South Dakota, Montana, Minnesota, part of Michigan, and part of Wisconsin. So I'm coming to South Dakota next week because I'm looking forward to hearing from people directly what's happening in the local economy, what's happening in the job market. Their information will help me be much better informed when I go back to Washington, D.C. to set monetary policy for the nation.
How often do you go to Washington, D.C. and have those kinds of conversations?
8 times a year, the Federal Open Market Committee meets, and I always, when I go around and we talk about what's happening in the economy, I talk about both our regional economy, including South Dakota, and we look at the national economy as well.
How different is the perspective from sort of the middle of the nation than when you go to Washington? Is it are there often vast disparities between the different districts?
There are big disparities between the districts, and there are big disparities between what the national statistics are showing and what we may be seeing on the ground. And I'll give you an example. Right now, the national statistics on unemployment have come pretty far down, around 4.4% for the national average, which seems like a pretty good unemployment rate. But if you dig deeper, there still are lots of folks who are outside of the labor force. Maybe they've given up looking, or they're stuck in part-time jobs. So when I go and I meet with local small businesses, when I meet with workers, they're able to give me a lot better insight of what the top-level statistics are missing.
So how difficult or challenging is it to balance those numbers and sort of the math of this and then the real human element that you see on the ground, especially as it relates to predicting what policy will help American economy in the future?
I wish I could say it was an exact science. I started out my career as an aerospace engineer. Mm-hmm. There's part science and there's also part art. And trying to understand, yes, businesses are having a tough time finding workers. I've already heard that that's true in Sioux Falls. But when is that going to lead to higher wages for workers? So it seems like a lot of jobs have been filled, but we're not seeing much wage growth. And when would that wage growth then lead to inflation? That's what we need to try to understand. But it's a little bit art and a little bit science.
Is higher wages or wage growth always a good thing then, or does it need to be kept in check? How does that play out?
Well, if it's what we call real wage growth, so wage growth net of inflation, it can be good for workers, good for consumers. They have more money in their pockets. But if it's just wages climbing because businesses are having to compete with each other, driving up wages, and that just leads to inflation, then your purchasing power doesn't go up. You may be getting a bigger paycheck, but if the food at the store or your rent or your car payment goes up just as fast, you're no better off. So we're trying to look at these different measurements to see, is this real growth or is it just inflation? Inflation by itself is not good. We'd like to see real growth for workers and for businesses.
How proactive is your job and how reactive is it?
Well, it's a mixture. So we look at all the statistics to try to forecast where we think the economy is going. But in some sense, it's a little bit like forecasting the weather. We think we know how it works. We see a trend, but then things all of a sudden change, and we didn't expect it. And so we have to look ahead, but we also have to be reactive and reacting to changing conditions, both in the regional economy, the national economy, but also in the global economy.
All right. Do you just read all the time? Is that, or are you looking at spread? I'm just trying to get my mind around how you do your job well and how do you do it better tomorrow than what you did today? How do you sort of set personal goals to continue to learn and grow even at your level?
Well, we have a team of wonderful economists, regional economists and national and international economists here at the Minneapolis Fed, and I work very, very closely with them. Yeah, I do read a lot all day, but I also try to get out into the district to meet with small business owners, workers, nonprofits to see what's happening on the ground. So this is my first visit to Sioux Falls next week, which I'm really excited about. Last year, I was in Rapid City. Every time I go out, I learn a lot. That makes me better at my job, and that complements the data and the formal reports that I'm looking at.
In 2008, you were Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. You were right there with the front seat and in the midst of the financial crisis, the Great Recession. What are the sort of lingering impacts of that today, and then what are the lessons from the Great Recession for today?
Well, we're still trying to crawl out of the Great Recession. I mean, the good news is the U.S. economy did not completely collapse. We're not in a Great Depression scenario, but it's still been a long, hard recovery, and a lot of people are still trying to get back to where they were before that crisis. So the lesson is these crises are incredibly costly for Main Street, for workers, for small businesses. And one of the big focuses I've had since I've been at the Minneapolis Fed is working on the too big to fail issue. The biggest banks in America are still too big to fail. And if there's another, if they get into trouble again, they're going to turn to taxpayers once again. And I don't think that's a good thing. I think we should make the biggest banks safe enough so that taxpayers are not on the hook. And so one of my priorities is making sure we don't forget the lessons of just how bad that crisis was so that we don't repeat it again.
Are we forgetting those lessons from a national monetary policy standpoint?
I don't think so much from a monetary policy standpoint we're forgetting the lessons, but I do think from a regulatory policy we're beginning to. You know, these, we all have fairly short memories. We move on in our lives. We're focused on our jobs and our families and the latest political challenge that the country's facing. And so it's easy to forget. And unfortunately, societies tend to repeat the same mistakes over and over and over again. And it may not be you and me, but it may be our kids or our grandkids. And so a key question that I'm asking is, how can we put in place regulatory measures today that can protect us in the future when we've forgotten just how bad the 08 crisis was?
So targeted regulation, when people in political conversations talk about deregulation being a good thing, moving the economy forward, you would argue that it's a targeted regulation or a choice of regulatory reform.
That's right. So, for example, I think we should relax regulations on community banks that were not at the core of the financial crisis, that do not pose a bigger risk to the economy, but at the same time force the biggest banks to have a bigger equity capital buffer, which will be there to protect the taxpayers in case they run into trouble. Community banks don't have a risk of bringing down the U.S. economy. The giant Wall Street banks do. So let's target the regulations where the risk is and relax them on other people.
When we open the newspaper and read about the stock market doing well and confidence in the national economy, but here in South Dakota, we often hear that the South Dakota economy is really struggling. What's happening here in our local economy that makes that at least seem true?
Well, one thing I know, the drought is really, really tough on South Dakota, and I've heard that a lot from small banks who lend to the ag sector, who lend to farmers, from farmers themselves. And so I'm interested when I go out to Sioux Falls to also hear about what's happening in the drought. So I know that that's a challenge. I also know that a lot of small towns and medium-sized towns are struggling to find the workers to feed their companies, whether it's manufacturing or services and whatnot. And a lot of times you've got out-migration, especially from rural communities. Young people are growing up there, but then going somewhere else for college and then going somewhere else to find a job. And so that population dynamic is also really challenging, I've seen, across a lot of our rural communities. But I'm looking forward to hearing from the folks in Sioux Falls what they're seeing and what challenges they face.
Are there policies to address that, or is that just sort of the way of the future right now? What can be done?
Well, I've seen some small towns and mid-sized towns do a better job than others by forming a partnership between their business community and their civic leaders to make the towns as appealing as possible, in many cases for folks to come back. So they go off for college, and maybe they start their career somewhere else, but when it's time to have a family, they want to come home because that's where they feel comfortable. And so I've seen some towns do a better job than others in encouraging that type of return back home. And so I'm interested to see in Sioux Falls how they're tackling that, if it's a similar problem or if they have different challenges.
You mentioned in a talk to another organization that I found online, you talked about innovation and how the things that we've been innovating haven't been that critical or important. Could you elaborate on that? I thought that was really intriguing.
Sure. One of the big economic questions that we're facing right now is that productivity growth in the U.S. economy is much slower than it has been historically. And productivity growth comes from how educated our workforce is, but it also comes from the kinds of things that we're developing, new technologies that we're researching. One of the theories is that the stuff that we're innovating right now, like social media, Twitter and Facebook, just isn't that transformative the way, say, the introduction of the integrated circuit or computers or 100 years ago the automobile or the airplane. Those were transformational technologies. Compared to the automobile, Facebook isn't that impressive. And so the question is, do we have new innovations in the pipeline that can really drive economic growth going forward, or are we going to stuck with more incremental changes the way we've been experiencing in recent years?
Let's talk a little bit about immigration. And as we watch, again, the news and sort of the philosophical or ideological impact of immigration, what to be done about it, let's talk about the economic impact. How closely should we be following that? And what are the right questions to ask about how national immigration policy ends up affecting monetary policy or affecting folks right here in South Dakota?
Yeah, immigration policy is enormously important. If you look at where economic growth comes from, it comes from productivity growth, which we just talked about, and it comes from population growth. And the fact is, as a country, we're just having fewer kids than we used to 20 or 30 years ago, so our population is growing more slowly. And that means we have three choices, and this is literally just math. We can either accept slower growth, we can try to subsidize fertility, for example, free child care, encouraging families to have more kids, which can be very expensive, or we can embrace immigration. And those are literally the three choices we have. And so my message to a lot of our district and a lot of the rural communities that are struggling for workers is, hey, immigration may be part of the solution. And we as a country need to have an honest conversation about that, because if we just cut off the flow of immigrants, we're going to see slower economic growth.
And what is the impact of that? What does that mean? Some people would say, okay, so we have slower economic growth. Big deal.
Well, that means businesses aren't going to make as much money in the future. You know, if we have more population growth, we have more consumers to buy food, to buy our crops, to buy homes, to buy cars. The overall economy grows more quickly, and then the pie gets bigger. And by the way, our population growth is a key driver for how we pay for our entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicare. If we don't have as many workers to pay for those programs, then we can't afford those programs anymore. And so a lot of our economy is built around, and a lot of our policies and programs are built around, a growing workforce. That workforce is not growing that quickly anymore, and everybody will be worse off if we suffer from slow growth.
Are there major changes in how we consider economic policy right now, or is it always sort of just tweaking and keeping things between the lanes? Are there big sea changes in how we view things that are necessary?
I don't think there are big sea changes. I think the best thing that we could do right now is get people to work together across party lines to tackle the big economic issues we face. So we need to get our education system reformed so everybody in our country is able to get a high-quality education. That's good for productivity growth. We're all better off if our fellow workers are knowledgeable and skilled. That doesn't mean everybody has to get a four-year college degree, but making sure that people have access to community colleges and trade schools, that's important too. So I think that that's a big one that we should focus on. I think reforming our immigration system to feed our economy, to provide the skills and workers we need, I think that also can do a lot of good. And then long-term, reforming our entitlement programs so that they are on path for fiscal balance, I think that will be very important as well. And the best way that I can think of to tackle any of those is to get people to work across party lines rather than just one party or the other.
What's the economic impact in the nation and in a state like South Dakota for when it comes to education, for leaving a certain group behind, say a Native American population or a Black population, a minority population? Does that affect the overall economic outlook?
It does, because I know when I get to Sioux Falls next week, I'm going to hear from businesses that say, we can't get workers with these skills to feed our companies and to meet the demand that we have from potential customers. So if you have businesses in Sioux Falls that need more workers, and you have Native American communities or African American communities that are not getting trained, not getting the skills, not only are those individuals and their families suffering, but the overall Sioux Falls economy is suffering as well. Compared to if we got them into training programs, everybody would be better off. And so having a system where we're able to reach all of our population, give them the skills that they need, they will be better off, our businesses will be better off, the state's tax base will be much stronger for it. I think it's a win for everybody.
What are you hoping to learn, and what are you learning from some of your other trips throughout the region? And what do you hope to learn in South Dakota?
Well, the biggest things for me are what's happening in the economy. That's the mandate that the Fed has. What's happening? What are employers finding? What are workers finding? What's happening to wages? Other topics that come up a lot are, for example, the opioid crisis and other drug epidemics around the country, and how that actually affects people's, obviously, their ability to get jobs. And I hear from a lot of business owners who say, yeah, you know, we interviewed this many people last week, but they couldn't pass a drug test, and so we couldn't hire them because they'd have to operate machinery. So better understanding what are the impediments of getting people into the workforce, whether it's training and skills or it's drugs, as an example, or other barriers, what are those barriers? And then we want to see what are policies that could try to address them. You know, the Fed really only has monetary policy under our control. But if we can do economic research that shines a light on some of these other barriers, then I feel like we have a role in educating, whether it's state legislatures or governors or the federal Congress, give them the data they need to craft policies that could make a difference.
Could you give me an example of what kind of research the Fed does that, again, affects policy that's outside monetary policy?
Sure. So in our researchers at our bank, before I joined it, did some very important research showing the benefits to taxpayers on early childhood education. They concluded that a dollar invested in preschool actually has a very positive return to taxpayers overall. And that research has then led to, in the state of Minnesota and in some other states, state governments getting behind those programs and starting to fund them. So that's a great example of where we're not controlling the education policy directly, but if we can do the research in a non-political, non-partisan manner, that can give other policymakers confidence to move those programs forward.
Do you have a sense of what South Dakota lawmakers are doing really well or areas that you would sort of nudge them to be concerned about?
You know, I don't yet. And that's actually a key factor that I'm looking forward to learning. Whenever I go to Washington, D.C., I meet with, as many times as I can, our elected officials, whether it's senators or congressmen and women. And I've met with many members, if not all, of the South Dakota delegation and have a good dialogue going with them. And so I'm not yet ready to say what are the gaps that they need to focus on.
What do you love about your job? I think it sounds so fascinating. What fascinates it for you? What's fascinating about your job for you, I should say?
You know, it's the learning. These topics are enormously complex. I get to meet with a wide range of people all across the region. Some people are fabulously successful. Some people are really struggling to make ends meet. Some people may be homeless and everything in between. And the vast majority of people that I meet are good people who want to try to provide a better life for themselves and their families, want a fair chance, and want to help their fellow citizens and their neighbors. And that's fun for me to get to know them and to learn from them. And then you marry that with the economic research and the PhD research that's being done. It ends up being a rewarding experience to be part of this and to be working at the Fed in a non-political way. I really like the fact that we don't get engaged in politics. We just try to identify problems and see if there are reasonable solutions.
Neil Kashkari, I want to say thank you so much for your time, and hopefully you'll enjoy your trip to Sioux Falls.
I'm sure I will. Thank you for the time as well.